once I started taking photos for this other broker, it came back to me that, whoa, I have a talent in this. And from there, I just kept on. It snowballed, you know. And then I was presented the opportunity through my work to work on a larger scale, and I started getting bigger and bigger clients.
Welcome to Architecture, Design, and Photography. Today we have a little bit of a different setup in that Peter Morneau.
That's right.
Contacted me through Instagram and said, hey, you want to grab coffee? And I was like, why don't we turn it into a podcast?
So, I know. I was like, wow, okay, let's do it.
Oh, you got to keep that online content rolling. So,
right.
So what's up?
Not much. You know, I've been in a professional photographer for several years now.
Tell me about yourself.
Sure.
Since this is really the first time we've met.
Yeah. So for past few years, I've been a professional photographer with commercial real estate photography, mm-hmm. interior design, stuff like that. And it's really taken off recently, and been a great career for me.
Cool. Yeah. Now, what were you doing before that, and how did you get into that?
Well, interesting. I was a real estate agent, a real estate broker beforehand.
Yeah.
And
how'd you like that?
I liked it, except there was a 24 hours a day, on call type job. And during that process, I started doing some photography.
Sure.
And really enjoyed it. And some oddities came along, or maybe not so odd, which is that a lot of people were saying, these are great photos.
These are great. Could you shoot my project for me?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah.
Where one broker said, could you photograph my place? And I started off with, your very basic computer and very basic camera, nothing fancy. And then as the more jobs progressed, I just started to upgrade my equipment.
Sure. Now, how do you, seeing that this will be a more photography-based architecture, mm-hmm. design and photography.
Yes.
Let's get a little weird and technical on gear. Like, what do you do for gear
and everything else? I love these questions. I could talk about this all day. And so I use a Nikon D850.
Yep.
And then I have three lenses that I like to cycle through, which is a 14-24 mm-hmm. and a 24 millimeter
now,
tilt
Nikon
shift.
Now, Nikon has tilt shift lenses as well?
That's okay. Right. Yeah, and they just came out with a new one, which is the 19 millimeter. That is a pretty hefty one and brand new, I believe, in 2018. So
I've been all Canon for as long as I've been shooting, and just recently upgraded to medium format Fuji, which is kind of scary and very different in all the technical way that it works. But I've really enjoyed the Canon tilt shift lenses, but I have an adapter that I can throw those lenses on the Fuji. And from what I've researched, people are getting pretty good results, but I'd love to be able to get just an adapter that I can then use Fuji lenses that just, all I need is the rise, fall, and shift.
Right.
I very, very rarely ever use the tilt of the lens to move the focus plane.
Yeah, same here.
So if they just had that, that's all I'd really need. And then I could shift over to having really just the 23, the 32 to 64, and then the 110 that Fujinon makes for that camera system. But yeah, anyways, kind of a steep learning curve on that one. But so you use Nikon gear, and do you use a lot of added lighting in your work or no? Or?
Sometimes. It's all very transitional for me as far as, I'll be using natural light, and then sometimes I'll need to pull in some additional flash pops here and there.
Tim and I were just going through a project where it was a mill renovation. Mm-hmm. And they just couldn't get the lights off, and it's a really difficult post-production process to make something look very refined and true to the experience if you have the incandescent lights or very warm lights on, but then you have very cool light coming through the windows, and and especially when you have brick red walls and yellow ceilings, and then you have all these different
color
temperatures bouncing around. It's really, really difficult. And then if you're on like a time crunch and then you've got like a guy running around all these electrical panels, seeing if it's one of those things. It's just like,
that's the nightmare of our work. Or at least I consider it to be. It's the color casts, you know, and all the different lighting sources.
Yeah, the common thing. If I can, and another project too. We're just kind of like trying to figure that out. You can overpower a lot if you have strobes, mm-hmm. But then you're taking so much time on set if you don't have a flat white ceiling,
right?
To utilize those strobes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a renovated mill with yellow ceilings because it's just sandblasted wood,
right,
and they can't get the incandescent lights off, and you have this natural light coming in, you've got to then try and suspend like a huge white sheet or something up there,
sure,
a scrim, you know, to bounce that off of, to balance all that out. And it's just it can be such a nightmare.
Huge task. And I think a lot of people, when they think about commercial photography, specifically architectural photography, they think I'm going to grab a camera and I'm going to go in there and I'm going to start doing this, you know? And once you do that, I mean, of course, that's how a lot of people start. You mm-hmm. know, that's how I started. I had no formal education. And,
No one's going to get hurt.
Right.
By capturing images.
Yeah.
If you mess up that part of it, I mean, sure, you could maybe catch something on fire and, you know,
right,
all that kind of stuff, sure, but it's not, I mean, at the end of the day, we're selling flowers, really. Mm-hmm. No one really needs what we do, but that's that interesting thing where those things that are this very subjective kind of selling flowers, to a degree,
sure,
you can make, if you're good at it and you do it right, you can make a really good living off of it, mm-hmm. or it can be, but it's very hard to get into that realm of it. But you can get by it as well. It's interesting. Like architects are, you know, for the most part of what architects do, they're unneeded,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a horrible thing to say. I get it. But four walls and a roof to keep the rain out is like what a lot of people are going to say. This is my base need here, and I'm good. You know,
right.
And so, you know, how much of the population actually uses architects? Very, very, you know, thin margin that actually mm-hmm. uses architects. But what they do brings so much value to the table, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about, you know, representing architecture to your potential clients brings so much value to the table when you're hiring a professional to do that, that's, you know, skilled at what they do.
Yeah, I see that. I see, you know, the only thing I would say is I do feel like photography is so integral to the, you know, online presence of all these businesses.
Oh, huge, yeah.
You know, it's just such an impact on, you
but
know.
But there's no law that you have to have it.
That's right, you don't.
And you can, yeah, so many people are like, well, my nephew's got a Nikon. I don't need to hire Peter.
Definitely.
And so the interesting thing that I come to is like, all right, whatever it is that this person does
mm-hmm.
and has, you know, invested all this money in their education and building their own business, blah, 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 all that, you know, millions of dollars eventually. And that comes to this one interaction of representing what they do mm-hmm. to their potential client. That one thing that's going to be the very tip of the spear is going to be the photographic representation or video representation of what all that work that they've done.
That's
it's
right.
going to be that tip of the spear. And if you've got an extremely dull tip of the spear that flies awkward, you know, that's getting your nephew who's got the Nikon to
mm-hmm.
sharpen your spear for you before battle.
It's a bad idea. That's really intense.
Yeah,
but yeah. But and with that, if you're going to a client, let's say you're an architect and you go to a client and you have your portfolio, let's say you're missing some of the best work you've done and you don't have photographs for that. That's where I think it's going to make or break you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being able to represent that with photos such the photos you do, for instance, very clean, crisp. And I'm sure people hear that all the time, those definitions or ways to describe a photo, but it is. You have very minimal color casts. The image feels very clean. And that's what I try to do with my work and provide for my clients as well. And I think when they go into a meeting with a potential client, if they have the right photos, they're going to be able to portray that work.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that's going to get them the business.
Yeah, it's like, you know? Occasionally I put on a piece of clothing that I just don't agree with. And I tell myself okay. to just get over it. And all throughout the day I go through with this like
it's
odd,
not
like,
right.
This is not me. I don't like it. I don't.
Yeah.
And I think if a business person, architect, whoever is going into a meeting with a photo that they don't feel great about, mm-hmm. it's kind of that same thing where they're putting all their vibe out there. Like we're the great, whatever. And we're really passionate about what we do, blah, blah, blah. But this photo doesn't really represent us well. You know, it's like that. So.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think that's why we get the calls, is because perhaps their nephew did try to take some photos.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of my best clients have been the ones who've gone cheap on representing their work, mm-hmm. and then realized like, oh,
right.
there's the value.
Right.
You know, so I had a situation where I submitted an estimate and someone else, I don't know who it was, submitted an estimate. They went with the cheaper estimate,
mm-hmm.
and they had to vacate their office for the day and bring staging and everything in. You know, they lost huge amounts of money to just get to the point of being able to do the photo shoot. And then they had to pay the photographer, and the results they got back didn't work for them.
Right.
And so they had to then stage the whole thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Kick everyone out of the office for the day again, and pay my exorbitant fee in addition to what they
massive fee.
Right. So, you know, I felt bad for them, but they've been an incredible client ever since.
Yeah.
You know,
I get that.
So
I had a situation just like that. You know, I submitted, an estimate, and they came back and they said, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, the person we used in the past is this. I couldn't help myself. I had to check their website.
Right.
And I said, that is why they would charge that, you
right.
know, because there's some issues here and there. But, you know, each to their own. I think the relationship building is a huge part, too, you know.
Yeah.
Really.
I've had to rely more strong. I've had to lean into trying to produce the best work I can more than relationship building, because mm-hmm. I'm not that friendly and sociable of a person.
Okay. I like that honesty. That's great.
I mean, there's not a lot of people who are going to, say, boy, Trent's just really so much fun to be around and talkative and warm. And yeah,
cool.
there's a small acquired taste for people that can put up with me, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, all right.
But it, you
Trent's
know, I'm
not running for mayor.
I've interacted and observed other photographers that are just so much better at mm-hmm. that, like, that are just better salespeople to
right.
a degree, and just have that ability to, you know, sell snow to an Eskimo, you know.
I get it. And you know, for social events myself, small talk, I'll get a little caught up and I'll be like, should I really talk about the weather again, you know? But
are you good at that kind of thing?
I can fake it, you know. I'm like, what does a social person look like? And then I'll get into that mode.
I can't do that. I just like 100%, I'll just be quiet.
Yeah.
And awkward, and they're like, I don't ever want to be around that guy again.
Yeah, you two are standing there like, and it's complete awkwardness.
Or
no,
I just
one has
find
anything
the
to say.
One person I know, and I'll just go and like tag along behind them the
and
whole time.
And then follow them
and
for,
then they're
yeah.
just kind of like, I have to meet other people. Can you go away?
So. Next time they like totally avoid you. Yeah. No. I'll go to some events, and I find that if I go to them over and over again, it gets easier for me because,
we'll
get acquainted and then, now I have a couple friends. But, you know, a lot of my business, and I think you'd probably agree, is from doing a good job and other people hearing about it.
Yeah, I mean, word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
If someone, and I experienced this in my own trajectory of my career so far, is that initially people will inquire about hiring you. and they'll get an estimate and they'll like, meh, can you do it for less? Yeah. Or they'll just not call back. Or if they do use you, then they'll come in and be very, they'll monitor the whole situation,
right,
and they'll have a lot of opinions that they feel that they have to interject. And
that really and then, hurts my creative flow. You know?
Yeah. And then, yeah. Then as you, keep working, as you get clients that are, that you have been recommended to, mm-hmm, that come to you because they heard about you from someone else, they don't question your fee as much. They don't try and control overly, mm-hmm, a shoot as much. Obviously, we're commercial photographers. I will usually give my opinion about twice. And if, mm-hmm, the client still wants to go the way they want to go, that's fine. I'm not an artist solely. I'm a commercial artist.
Do you stick with them after they make that decision?
Yeah. Usually? Yeah. If they truly make that decision, you know, that's fine. I don't have, a moral vision, right, that has to be communicated in these images.
Do you have a line?
I can choose to put those, yeah, images on my website and represent them or, mm-hmm, not. But if they, overseeing their brand, say, no, we need the pillow to be chopped rather than, you know.
I love chopped pillow, yeah, too. I'm a big fan. So, I maybe invented that. Don't quote me, but.
So, you know, it's not, I don't have that much skin in the game,
right,
for that kind of thing. And I, yeah, realize that I'm, you know, I'm not solely selling my vision. Mm-hmm. I'm overlaying my vision on top of what someone else has already put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into. That's an extremely important thing, I think, to remember and to keep in mind, is that at the end of what you produce, what you create, if someone looks at it and says, wow, what a great photograph, you failed.
Mm-hmm.
What someone needs to look at, or what someone needs to be thinking when they look at a photograph that you produce of architecture is, wow, what amazing architecture. And that's a real subtle thing there, right? Mm-hmm. If you play so many photographer games and have such a strong photographer voice of doing these little, you know, things that are like lighting tricks and, you know,
right,
if you make it too much of a photograph and less of a representation of architecture in that realm of architectural photography, I think you've failed.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my own opinion. I have a lot less. I try and have a quieter voice,
mm-hmm,
a more silent representation of architectural work.
Do you have any big influencers as you're getting into the game?
I would say the big influence for me was like, more kind of Scandinavian minimalist architecture,
okay,
which everything about it is minimal, and it's quiet, it's silent, it's serene in that, and it's fairly rigid to,
mm-hmm,
to a large degree, and it's usually very a little more single directional light and very controlled light sources,
mm-hmm,
generally.
Yeah.
And that, just from architecture school, seeing those kind of things influenced what I wanted to design, and then hence what I want to see and what I want to shoot when I'm producing images.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge, I think, influence for me. Photographically, no one. I don't know that much about other photographers, and I, to a fault, or I just don't follow other photographers in my region, or really in my, you know, that I would compete with or anything else, because, emotionally, as a self-employed creative, it's a very difficult thing to watch other people get work that you could have had.
Right. I get
so
that. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Sure. You know, that's just a completely morale protection thing,
mm-hmm,
for me. So
yeah.
I generally don't look through the magazines that I contribute to.
Mm-hmm.
And unless it's for like me needing to more clearly understand maybe the repetition of the article that they're wanting me to contribute to and the voice of that specific article and how right. we should capture it or something, you know, I'll do that. But I generally don't pick up and go through publications.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've, you know, in the past I haven't done that. I think recently in maybe the last year, you know, 8 months or something like that, to be too specific, I've looked at other magazines. I'm saying, you know, okay, what are, you know, what's going on right now? And mm-hmm. But when I first started, I had no practice, you know, I had no experience. I just kind of just grabbed the camera and went with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I basically did the same thing. I had from architecture school, I learned how to use Photoshop to mm-hmm. put architectural presentations together. And right. so I knew I had, I put together a tripod camera and like two strobes.
Okay.
And like one or two lenses.
That's pretty nice.
And I went and I tried to use the strobes and I was like, this isn't working. This
right.
looks horrible. I don't know what these things are doing or why they're doing it. Or
do I point it right at it?
Yeah, and I pointed at it, and I wouldn't understand why it, like, this looks horrible and harsh. But
yeah.
every time I would just let the shutter drag and get, like, a long natural light exposure, I was like, ooh, that
those
was really nice.
Those work really well, yeah.
But mm-hmm. the lack of dynamic range and everything that I was capturing wasn't working, so I was like, all right, I could do... these things will perfectly overlay if mm-hmm. I, you know, and so I just kind of developed a practice of bracketing, which is taking multiple exposures.
Right.
And then in post, not just toggling some switches, but actually by hand putting them together and making sure that everything looks actually how you'd see it.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that. And it developed a look that, I was like, all right, that's what I've seen before. That's what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how can I push this and move it? And how can I use these lights to help complement that look and feel?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I went to school for that.
Mm.
Now, in the beginning, when I started out, I did look through a lot of publications and read a lot of books on just photography and the different, you know, tricks and everything else that you can do to achieve, you know, desired results.
Right.
And I would cut out like any image I saw that I gravitated towards, I would just cut out, tape on the wall. And,
oh, that's great.
And try and
yeah.
I'd look at it and try like, where did they add light here? How did they do that?
Right.
And how did they get that feel? And
cutting it out and putting it on the wall. That reminds me of the '80s or something.
Yeah. Right.
You
now
know?
Everyone would just have a Pinterest board. The thing
yeah.
I liked is you actually had it there looking at you every time you went into like the office to do something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When I first started, I can remember my first creative process with photography. It was when I was in high school. My friend John and I, we had, you know, just a disposable camera, and we went to this construction site, right? And we climbed up on the construction vehicle. It was after hours, and this is not a true story for the record. But we climbed up on these construction vehicles and put on the hard hat, and I took pictures of him, and he took pictures of me, and we just thought we had so much fun just playing around, looking like we were real construction workers.
I mean, as a kid, I remember climbing on those things and actually
yeah.
they would start and I was like, whoa.
Oh no. Yeah, I didn't press any buttons when I was
oh,
up there.
I did.
Yeah.
That was a bad idea.
Oh, I bet it was. Yeah. And then it's like, how do I turn this up?
Yeah.
What do I do with it now? What's the next step? You know, but yeah, I always had a creative, you know, creative mind. And, you know, as I grew older, I kind of tried to push that aside and become more, you know, mainstream with my life, like getting a 9-to-5 job,
sure.
you know, seeing how I could participate in what I considered to be a normal lifestyle.
Now,
right?
Why did you do that? And why did you maybe want to or not want to do that?
Well, I think, you know, I've got dyslexia, right? And I've always had trouble in school. And so I think I had something to prove that I had that I had this normal, that I could fit in. Right,
you like know, you could be someone you weren't if you tried really hard.
That's right, and it was like going against the grain. It was
right.
a really difficult choice,
yeah.
you know, and because my mind was wired to be creative, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I remember talking to my dad one day, and he said, you know, Pete, I always felt like you should have gone, you know, to college, you know, to be creative, you know, and because I went to school for psychology, which helps me out quite a bit.
Oh, that's,
you know, with clients.
I love psychology. Yeah. It's interesting.
But isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, two of the most favorite classes for me in college were like very low level psychology class.
Sure.
And then interpersonal communications class.
Yes.
Like I learned a lot about all the stuff I was doing wrong.
So. Oh, Trent, you're doing great right now. Yeah. You got it. You picked up something along the way. Once I started taking photos for this other broker, right? It kind of came back to me that, whoa, I have a talent in this.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I just kept on. It snowballed, you know. And then I was presented the opportunity through my work. You know, this is, I think.
Through your work as a real estate agent?
No, as a photographer.
Yep.
You know, to work on a larger scale. And I started mm-hmm. getting bigger and bigger clients. You know, so at this, on top of being a commercial, you know, architectural photographer, I also, some of my main work is with Sotheby's.
Yep.
So I photograph most of the listings in Southern Maine, and cool. That keeps me very busy.
Yeah.
You know, but then it just started expanding into publications, commercial.
Sure. So when you shoot for architects or mm-hmm. publications compared to real estate.
Oh. Totally
What's
different
your
ball
different
game.
Approach?
Yeah, completely different ball game. So with real estate, it is it's quick pace, fast pace. I mean, given even though like a lot of places that I photograph are 4,000 up to 6,000 square feet oceanfront homes, right? So it still takes me, you know, 5 hours to photograph the property,
mm-hmm.
but it's a different concept. What I'm trying to do is work with the light that I have. I don't have the luxury of waiting around for the time of day that best suits the property. I need to get in there and I need to photograph the property as it is. You know, and as a photographer, lighting and natural lighting is such a huge benefit. And,
yep.
You know, so I go in, I photograph. I'm focusing more on the flow of the property and what's included with the property.
Right.
Yeah, so a lot of that work is about, as someone buying a house, you know, what are they going to get out of that property?
Right,
and what
right.
does it look like to be there?
See, it's interesting to me how influenced your photographic approach is, how mm-hmm. strongly influenced because of your background as a
yes.
real estate agent, where when I initially was coming to a project, I was, you know, 100% informed by my background as an architect,
right.
you know?
Right.
And it's interesting how that just sits in the back of your mind and is like what you're doing. And I've said this before, I guess, that as a photographer, I mean, anyone can point a camera and push a button.
Definitely.
What it's really about is your background and your life experience, that it's you sharing what you see,
mm-hmm.
you know,
That's
and
right.
it's. You know, to learn the technical ball game of photography is not why you get paid.
Right.
It 100% isn't. And that's mm-hmm. why the nephew with the Nikon is, you know, next to worthless.
That's right.
I mean, it'll produce a technically better image that holds together, but mm-hmm. you're translating your lived experience and all of your problem solving capabilities, your subjective experience of life, you're just putting those into single frames and how you would look at something. So when you go to hire a photographer, you're asking, you know, can you show other people how you see this?
Right.
Is what people are doing.
Yeah. And I think it's an innate ability that, you know, some of the most successful photographers have, especially in architectural photography. The photo that you're taking, it's, you know, a direct representation, like you were saying, of what you're seeing. And to have that sight of, okay, what looks good? You know, how can I make these columns look interesting, intriguing? You know, given in a certain situation, you might have a different approach for what you're looking for out of the image. But how do I find emotion in a blank wall? And I think a lot of that comes naturally. You
right.
know, so your success, my success in this business is being able to see the beauty and the creativity that we're able to bring in.
Right.
That nephew cannot do.
Right. Well, the nephew might be able to do it eventually.
Yeah, computer might be able to do it eventually. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, there's I mean, that's, I look at, I'm constantly looking at what's going to, oh, I'm constantly thinking about what's going to make me go under.
Oh.
How am I going to fail?
Oh, that's tough.
Right?
Yeah.
I've just got that voice in my head that's, you're going to fail.
Right. Your wife's like, what are you thinking about? And you're like, just how I'm going to fail. I don't know. It's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why I expanded into doing video. One, it's just creatively, it's a whole different ball game.
Right.
And it's a whole different technical problem, whole different creative problem, which is really interesting and invigorating. Mm-hmm. But it's also, if you can't provide that along with still imagery, that's going to be a tick against you.
Right.
And to be able to provide it along with still imagery is a huge benefit for potential clients.
I get that request a lot. Yeah. You know, can you pair this with a video?
And, yep.
And you know, that for me, I'm on that path of, trying to bring that in for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'm not trying to represent myself as someone that has a lot of experience with videography.
Yeah, no, I have a big client that they hire us primarily for still photography.
Yeah.
But they also know that we can do very controlled movement reproduction of what we already staged for the still photo.
Right.
And so I'm not able to charge a huge amount of money to just come in and do video production at this point, but it's definitely something that, you know, we can do architectural videography in a controlled atmosphere, and we can do it very well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different thing than really shooting like lifestyle in a very active environment and everything else. That's just not something that we've had a lot of experience with at this point.
Right.
And it's not something I'm trying to get more work around at this point.
Yeah, but I can get some anxiety around lifestyle.
It's just such a, well, I mean, it's like being a wedding photographer compared to being an architectural photographer.
Well,
as an architectural photographer, you're kind of God for the day.
Right.
And like, everyone leave me alone. I'm going to control everything.
I love that.
You know, and it's like you and maybe one other person, and you just get to produce and think about and just get everything in line.
It's the best feeling. People have asked me for wedding photography, you know, because some people, see a photographer as a universal, you know, you can do everything from pets to weddings to portraits.
You can do it,
you
but
do
can
have
you
the technical
do it well,
skill. Yeah.
You know, it, and it's people that do wedding photography and do it well. It's for me to look at that, it's like an extremely difficult thing that I would not want to do, because it would feel so incredibly just stressful. But at the same time, the first architectural shoot I tried to do, I completely failed at and left.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, no one was paying me, and I was there by myself.
Yeah.
So I had that luxury, but I got access to a nice location and went and tried to shoot it, and it was so, the horsepower tax on my brain to think in that manner. I was shooting the inside of something. It was like I had stuck a camera in someone's body, and I was trying to find, like, this does not compute.
You're
and I was trying
deep,
to frame up interior spaces, and I had never approached that before visually thinking about that, like framing that up. And it was so difficult, but I gave up that time, and I had, you know, access to a nice location, but I just, you know, couldn't do it that day anyways.
Right.
And luckily I kept at it and started to kind of find, like, oh, if I start by just going full on square everything up first, and if that's great, then great. But if not, start to move off axis with certain things, start to move pieces around, think about the light, start with getting all the lights off and seeing what the natural light does. You know, there's ways of approaching it, but that's a process of like, produce and eliminate, that you're working constantly on this one thing. Whereas wedding photography, you're circling a hurricane. You
know, I watch them at weddings and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't know what to do.
No.
Did you get the photo of our grandmother? And it's my gosh. Yeah. No, I didn't.
You'd have to have, for me, I'd have to have a really intense producer, just pointing me at, like, capture the grandmother, capture the, now capture this camera. Okay, I can do that, but I can't keep all that in my mind going at the same time. And
well, and that's a great thing. As a full-time photographer at this point, I'm like, I know what the settings are, right? If you want me to capture this. But, you know, the stress of being in that fluid environment. Whereas
it's a different deal.
Yeah, it's a different deal. I mean, you know, you have some lifestyle shots in your work that I really admire.
It's such a controlled, such a controlled addition though.
Right.
It's like we've done everything else and then we look at the frame and we're like, all right, I think someone right here is going to be good doing this. Someone there doing that is going to, it's not like just Jimmy and Bobby and Susie and they're dancing and I have to run around and find that moment. It's still a totally, you know, I'm still playing God and saying, thou shalt add people here.
Yes.
Now do this. Do it again. 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 You know.
The worst is when you don't really know, though. You know, I've had clients, as someone that's creative, you know, sometimes I'm a little, I can be spacey about things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what is a benefit to me in so many situations is also my mind thinking of so many different things at the same time. So someone says, do you want this plant right here? And I've learned, yes, I do. And then if I change my mind, I just move it, you know, but with the, you know, with the wedding photography and whatnot, I can see the stress of that, me just not being able to focus, you know?
So what do you think of your creative process? Do you have any idea how you work and why?
Like,
why do you like that? It's such a, it's just a whole subjective take on visually looking at stuff for a whole day. And it's just such a mystery to me. Like, it's not a empirical thing in any way, shape, or form. It's just this weird kind of like, I like it, I don't like it, I like it, I don't like it. Why?
Who knows? Yeah. You know, and because you can know the rule of thirds or zero-point perspective, something like that, you know, but still.
To me, that's, knowing those rules is like starting dead on.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, frame up the room, just square it,
right?
You've accomplished that. Now break away from that if it makes sense.
Yes.
Break that rule.
Yes.
You know? And to know those rules is good, but if you can know them and break them intentionally to say something, then that's when things start. Like if I look at fine art photography, it's not interesting to me unless it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what do you mean by that?
Well,
I said, but
if things, especially with photography, because it is such a, obviously, here is an extremely literal representation of, you know, it's a photograph. Like if you were standing there and, you know, they took it with a 50 lens, it's going to be pretty much the exact thing you'd see.
Yes.
So, you know, what I do with architectural photography is, you know, basically just, you know, you're doing everything you can to make this design space or exterior look as absolutely best as it can through composition, lighting, styling, all of that. There's a lot of lying going on and everything else, but you know, it's advertising, it's sales, and then in post you're doing all that, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Now, fine art photography is a different thing. You're creating simply an emotion that has some voice, search for truth, and vision behind it that should be communicated. And if it's fine art photography and I can tell what's going on immediately, it just doesn't have as much... it doesn't have enough twist to engage the rest of my mind to figure it out. Right?
Yeah, it's pretty one-dimensional, pretty simple. I mean, not the actual photo, but the concept of what you're looking
at. Right, like if everything can be in focus and you can tell what everything is, but there should be some dimension in there for me that's extremely confusing, as in something's really out of place.
Right.
Like, you know, it's art, you know? And like, I have one of the first, you know, kind of test runs I did with this new camera, I went and shot my wife and son riding horses at the beach. And
I love that photo.
Yeah, and it's that a confusing little photo because this horse is just like floating. Its legs are collected under it. Uh-huh. It doesn't look like it's moving fast,
right.
But it just looks like the horse jumped up, collected its legs underneath it.
Right.
And my wife's in this perfect posture. She's not like leaning forward.
She crushed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you.
Well, it's just, to me, it's like just a little like, whoa, wait a minute, mm-hmm. you know, and just that little bit of, whoa, wait a minute, is just kind of that, you know, that gentle, nice T-bone in your day
yeah.
that just kind of makes you like, oh, that's interesting.
That's
then
what
the rest of your
the
day, something yeah. odd happened and it does kind of make you take the rest of the day differently. I didn't.
Yeah.
For someone who can't really string words together, well, that's
you're
about
doing,
as much as
yeah,
I can
yeah.
say.
You're doing great. You're doing great. You know, with the question before, the difference between real estate and commercial photography
mm-hmm.
is when I go into a commercial shoot, it's completely different from real estate. You know, usually
yeah.
with real estate, I have the whole day. I just... Even though it's fast-paced and there is a different thought going into getting the end product, you know, with commercial photography, it's much slower and much more drawn out. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot more mm-hmm. brand vision than
right.
people that have that there was a lot of intent in the visuals that
mm-hmm.
you're looking to pull out of that and communicate to their next client.
Right.
Whereas with real estate, you're looking to show the amenities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, to me, when I did shoot real estate, it would be far more informational. There's, you know, a sliding scale between informational and emotional.
Right.
Right? And it was a little skewed towards information
mm-hmm.
because you do want to talk about these amenities, but you do want to still create that welcoming and wonderful feel, obviously.
Right.
But yeah, it's and each project probably just requires that different, you know, dial setting on
that's
that
right.
scale. Maybe.
Yeah, you've got to approach it just a little bit, you know, well, quite differently. You know, with the commercial work, it's you do have somewhat of a luxury where, okay, I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to do a day shoot and I'm going to get 6 shots today, right? And let's say each shot takes you an hour and a half or something like that. So then you plan out the different areas, you know, when the sun's going to be best or when you think the sun is going to be best.
Right.
And there's been times where I'm like, oh, it's definitely 11 o'clock. This is it. And you get in there and you're like, oh, man, I didn't know it was going to be that high.
Unless it's a bathroom or a kitchen that would accommodate it, I generally just don't like any direct light
mm-hmm.
coming in.
Oh, it's great if you don't. I mean, you know, and it and that is also a big influence, the differences, you know, because with real estate, you are obligated to get these more encompassing, wider shots, you know, whereas with commercial, you can sometimes focus in, you know, with like a 24 millimeter lens
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, with real estate, I'll usually use that large 14 to 24 millimeter lens,
yep.
which is a massive, very cool Nikon lens. I know
mm-hmm.
we're not part of the same camp on that, and I'm obviously feel like an outsider sometimes. Everybody, you know, Canon is a big, for architectural photography, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I've recently found, I was going through someone's website that had contacted me and
mm-hmm.
they had this really nice image as I was going through that was kind of on this arm of a chair, arm of a couch and
mm-hmm.
over a balcony or something. And I was like, oh, that's a really nice
mm-hmm.
image. 4 or 5 images later, exact same composition. It was just uncropped. It was the full image. And it was a horrible image.
Why would they do that? Do you think there was a...
Just bad choice,
yeah,
or
bad
taste.
Yeah, bad choice, yeah,
no.
Yeah. I know.
No, I think they just thought that the wider image had validity to be on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it didn't. The other
right.
one was a really great image. I mean, it
yeah.
caught my eye. But the wider one didn't. And that made me realize, like, cropping, even after you shoot, is just such a, you know... It's really important. I'm
yeah.
doing a lot more of that recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of the, you know, self-deception I told myself to get this different camera is that
you need that camera to make it
happen. Cause I can crop in so much more if I want.
Right.
So, I mean, really we have a client that, is requiring us to use medium format and everything else. So mm-hmm. there's that as well. I could rent, but then I'm not going to be familiar with the camera.
Right.
So
yeah, you show up on site, you're like, oh, I just
hold on. Let me keep pushing buttons. And
how does this thing turn on? Yeah. Someone got a manual.
So I'm excited to start to work on that aspect of it as well.
I could imagine
more. And I mean, I'm constantly with my Canon, I'm doing stitching,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it produces so much more work in post.
Right.
And like, again, Tim and I were just going through some stuff and I just kept looking at it thinking, yeah, we could shrink this frame and you mm-hmm. know, crop in and be a lot better. So,
yeah, I spend a massive amount of time in post-production, but you know, you learn a lot when you're in there.
Oh yeah.
And I need a chiropractor because of it, but you know,
I had sent Tim something a while ago that it's like this whole chair that you sit in, it has the screens, and you lean back.
Yes, yes.
Like, I mean, Tim, it's going to save us. This, wouldn't you?
We need to get that. We need to. Yeah. I told Kate, my girl, I said, we at some point will have to incorporate this into our house. Because, or you know, at some point I'll have someone help me processing. But do you how much time would you say when you sit down and process photos or
me
get into post production
personally now myself? Very, very little. I'll go through with Tim, like, so I started out doing all of it myself and mm-hmm. developed a look and feel, but I'm just honestly not the guy that is going to learn all the ins and outs of that technical program that's going to allow you to achieve that much better aesthetic. So mm-hmm. I would make myself do it because I knew I had to. I need to get to a point where I can pay someone who has the ability and the desire to work in this manner
mm-hmm.
and to make these things look great. And it will only add to what I'm doing. So I waited until I had enough work to where I felt like I was going to explode and then put money aside to pay someone to come in. And then hopefully I can justify that increase in expense and everything else. And I got one guy to come in and do that, who's, you know, an amazing post producer and everything else, but I did not manage the situation well. Mm-hmm. And so that relationship and everything didn't work out. But I learned from it, and going into the next guy I found, who is still with me now, Tim, it worked so much better because of the things I learned, and because Tim's just extremely skilled at what he does. He doesn't need, you know, hardly any management from me. I'm a horrible person manager.
Oh, you are? Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. I don't. And so we had some time of just basically, Tim had done a lot of work in other areas of post-production, mm-hmm. but not as much in architectural post-production. And so there was a bit of a learning curve, but not that much.
Really? Yeah, because I could see those being very different. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's so much more dealing with these hard lines of mm-hmm. high contrast and everything else and color representation from color casts and stuff that you try and avoid and capture. But mm-hmm. but yeah, today I will get back from a shoot and I basically hand the cards to Tim and he knows to just pick the composition middle of the bracket, put them mm-hmm. together into a contact sheet and basically hit autocorrect for most everything to send to the client to choose from, like, all right, let's post produce these 10 images.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim, then from us working together for the years that we have, he knows how to get it to about 90% of where it needs mm-hmm. to be, where I would like it. And then we sit down and go through them at that point. And then I'll kind of say, we need to add a little bit of gradient here, vignette here, or let's take this out, put that in, let's switch out the lifestyle.
Right.
You know, and that process, just depending on the project, can take a lot of time, or it can be something that, you know, is just like, these all look great, let's move on. So
well, that would be a nice outcome.
No, it. I mean, it's a huge expense to take on as a business to have an employee, but it to have that added layer of expertise and ability is a huge benefit to your client.
Oh, so. I can see that. I mean, especially your well-being as well. You know, this summer, for instance, I was doing, five to 10 shoots a week. And just...
That's a huge amount of work.
I know. And if there's a photographer watching, they're going like, what?
You're going to start dialing back on your quality in post-production if you're not, you know.
Yeah.
Or you're going to, you know, not get enough rest and your ability to produce... on site what you need is going to be taken away from
it. Oh, definitely.
So you go to that red line and then you say, all right, I need to invest now in a way to be able to do more of this, but in a healthy and effective and high quality manner.
Yeah. So, and that is where I'm at, you know, after this summer. So, you know, for people that are not photographers or don't know, 5 to 10 shoots is a ridiculous amount to try to accomplish in one week. And, you know, but I hit that stride in my career where I was providing clients the product that they were looking for. They were telling their friends, they were calling me. And as a business owner, that's so exciting. You know, you want to continue to say yes.
Oh, as a sole proprietorship, working as a creative.
Yes.
God forbid you ever say no to anything.
I know. Tell me about it. Well, that's why I was saying
before.
Like, if
I say no to this, I'm going to starve and be homeless. You know, it's really difficult.
I've had some, there's been some asks that I've really been on the line about, you know, do I take this job? Do I not? And I think also, you know, just to celebrate that, you know, when you hit that level as a photographer, it's like, oh my gosh. I've started creeping towards the percentage of people that actually have success in this field. And, you know, thank you to all my clients. I'm sure you feel the same, but it's just like, oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, every time I would get any job, it's like, here's a chance for me to knock this out of the park.
Right.
And if I don't swing for the fence, this, I'm not doing what I need to do. And yeah. And so it's extremely difficult to say to someone who wants you to shoot something like, I don't want to take your money and I don't want to go be creative for a day, you know? And like, why on earth would you not do that?
Right.
Well, you have to start to think about the entirety of your life for one. Like, do you have kids? Should you be spending time with your children and your wife?
Right.
Should you maybe go for a jog or work out occasionally? You know, there's like all these things that, you have to moderate.
You do. And that's
super hard when you're constantly thinking, this is an extremely hard thing to be successful at.
Right.
And when you are there, it's very, very difficult to not think, I'm just lucky.
Right.
I'm just lucky. I'm not actually skilled.
Right.
I'm not actually good at this. I'm not actually any of that. I'm just lucky.
Right.
That's going to be the voice in your head.
Definitely.
That's going to make you keep taking every single job, no matter what. And I suffer from that big time. And, you know, one of the worst jobs I've ever photographed, not as in the performance that I did, but the quality of the job, like the absolute worthlessness for me to even be there to photograph this thing. You know, as far as like innovative design goes, right?
Sure.
I did probably 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I've been doing this for how many years?
Yeah.
Now, that being said, they, you know, approached me and like, will you do this? And I was like, I do not want to go shoot that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just put a big number on it. That's what I use to do that.
It's what I do with videos.
And they they kind of came back mid-range and like, all right, well, geez. I guess, you know, we'll meet in the middle and, you know, I'll do this. And so
I know that feeling.
I'm happy to have the work. It didn't take me that long, and they got, you know, a far better representation of their project than they probably would have gotten from a lot of other people. Everyone around benefited from it, but it was not work that fed me creatively.
Right.
So I paid a cost in that manner, in doing that. Was it worth it? I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to think through.
It's almost like I've had like some scenarios where you want to reach out and be like, you don't need to give me photo credit on any of this.
Just, oh, no.
You do your thing with it. I'll take, pay you for my time. But
it's a very weird thing. It's to sell your subjective experience.
Right.
It's what you're doing.
Well, and just like the voice you were talking about, I have that too. And, you know, even on some shoots, I'll provide the clients with the final product. And when I hit send, I literally think to myself, this is it. This is the end of our relationship. Right? You've probably had these moments, right? And then guess what I get for an email back, right?
These are great.
These are fantastic. My client, we are, like, I cried when I looked at these. This is exactly what I envisioned. Like, you are so talented. And an hour ago, I was saying to myself, well, I'm not going to get this client again.
Right.
It's crazy.
But at this is... difficult as that is to live with, it's kind of like it's the voice in your head that makes you scared to walk through the woods at night.
Right.
Because you know, for however many yawns, that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
You don't go out in the woods. You
don't do it. Yeah.
And so you build up this thing that tells you, like, you know, don't swim in alligator ponds and, you know, but at some point you do have to leave the cave to go get the food. And
definitely.
And so you know, it's this thing riding on your back to, like, you got to do this. And now, like, all those survival instincts and everything else, mm-hmm. how they apply now apply in this weird way of, like, you know, don't ever say no to,
right.
you know, getting
right.
that money to do this, because so it's a really, really weird thing that you can get to, like, the point where I'm at or where you're at and say, like, you can say stuff like this where don't quite focus so much mm-hmm. on the money and more focus on the philosophy and vision
yes,
of what you do
yes.
with your work.
There
and
is a certain
for
fund for that.
Who's
yeah.
still, like, clawing to actually get someone to pay them money to do anything,
right.
to hear that is mm-hmm. just like, you know, because I remember...
But you had to go through that to get to where you're at, right?
Of course.
You know?
And so that's why I hesitate even saying this kind of stuff. But,
right.
like, I remember buying the Eric Almas CD.
Oh, yeah?
Do you know who Eric Almas is?
No, I don't.
He's an advertising photographer who
okay.
does a really great job.
I mean, of course I do.
You're right.
Yeah.
He doesn't shoot architecture and stuff. But anyways, he has a really neat look and feel, and I was interested in his process and everything, and...
Mm-hmm.
He kept downplaying all this stuff that was technical, but all of that technical stuff and how he did it gave me a roadmap to his vision of
right.
how I could at least, like, all right, that's how I make my images look like his if
right.
I want to, right?
Definitely.
And he kept kind of pushing that aside, saying, it's not
it's
about
no
this
deal.
Technical stuff.
Yeah.
It's about the vision you have. And I kept at my position at that point saying, I don't know the vision I really
right.
have because I don't even know how to create it and then react to it. You
yeah,
know?
It's probably infuriating at that stage.
Yeah,
in your
there's
career.
Just some kind of, you know, scale of progression of a photographer that you have to work through
right.
to come to peace with the amount of work you do. The amount of creative energy that you're able to retain,
sure.
how much of that energy you want to spend and not retain
mm-hmm.
To get continued work and everything else. It's,
right.
It's
and I
such
get that
a
mindset
act.
Too. You know, the mindset of, so, you know, if at your point in your career, which I someday hope to get to, you know, but at the same point, you know, at the point in my career, you know, I'm doing thousands of hours of photography a year. But, you know, very fortunate. And so I can see how, you know, it's like, oh, I really don't, you know, I just get in there and I do it. You
right.
know, I have no,
well,
you
that,
know.
That
but
is,
for the first person time picking up a camera, they're like, well, what do you mean? You
oh,
don't
yeah,
know how
no,
you do
I,
it.
I occasionally will be shooting and I'll think, oh, geez, I hope no one figures out how easy this is.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm going to be out of a job. Or I can't tell people how I do this because anyone can do it. Then
right.
I'll be out of a job. But then you try and tell people how to do it.
Yeah.
And it turns into like 6 hours of, right. Well, why did you do this? Because of that. Why did you do that? Because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that there is just so much going on.
Right.
To actually get that very specific X factor that you have, mm-hmm. translated into that frame.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much going on that actually translates into that.
Oh, definitely. Do I use a polarizing filter? Do I not? What neutral density filter? Like, all
well, yeah, but I mean, yeah. Even like, why did you set the camera at that height? Why were you not a little to the left? Why were you not a little to the right? Why was that glass there? Why was this here? Why was it there? Why does the light have this tone? Mm-hmm. Why is it that harshness or not that? Like, all of those things play into a singular vision of you sharing what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it just does not boil down to an index finger hitting a trigger button, you
right.
know? So it being honest with yourself and realizing your own value is difficult when it's so easy to just capture an image, you know, it's, you know, you don't have to do like a huge view camera setup with, you know, 3 minute exposures and like the technical hurdles are done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not in that realm anymore.
Yeah.
It's creativity, vision, and the ability to manipulate light and composition and add the human element in what we do,
mm-hmm.
that is the value. And it's the subjective experience that translates through your life into that frame that is the value that people pay for.
Right.
So it's a hard thing to admit that to yourself and to stick to your guns and say, no, I am valuable and I can justify this fee. You know, that's
right. Yeah, and it feels, there's one photographer. There's three photographers that probably, I would say I do seek professional advice from, and that would be, one would be Mike Kelly, who featured you in his blog. He's a great guy. And then Tony Roseland and Barry McKenzie, right? And I might not, you know, being dyslexic, sometimes my pronunciation is, but they're close enough. And, you know, so those guys, the three guys, they all have a focus on real estate architecture, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll give some more technical advice that I found helpful when I was developing,
mm-hmm.
you know, my technical side, right? Which really didn't change my creative side. You know, I still had an idea of what I wanted, but the question was...
Well, it's kind of like artists talking about paintbrushes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's, yeah. I mean,
no, that's a great analogy.
Cameras are much more complex, and
mm-hmm.
I get that.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be a technician.
Mm-hmm. No.
You don't want to get paid as a technician.
I get a lot of joy from the, like, looking at the beauty. Like, when I look at some photos on the wall over here, you guys can't see it, but I get joy out of seeing those, you know, seeing the composition, the perspective, how things are set up. It's just... I feel good, you know, and I'm chasing that feel good feeling.
Now to push back on my technical comment there, like I am
retracting,
like, well, not retracting.
I know,
but
I'm kidding.
I admit that my value, the thing I charge for, has nothing to do with my technical capabilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to know that helps you focus on the things that are most important of what you're getting paid for. Right.
Right.
Now, the technical stuff is important. You cannot have a degradation of the quality of your work because of the technical side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I extremely enjoy all the technical crap.
Oh yeah, I'm a big nerd.
I'm like, I remember when cell phones used to have a big turnover as far as like you'd have to learn a whole new deal every time you got a new cell phone.
Yeah, like a Nokia.
And I would be so
one,
excited to get this something. New cell phone, and I'd figure everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I figured it out, I'd have this little drop in my emotions of like, well, I figured it out. I guess I'll just put it in my pocket.
Yeah. Maybe use it for calling people.
Yeah, right.
It's
so
a tough life.
The technical side of it is fun to me, but it also... Anyone who's not me or you or
mm-hmm.
people like us involved in this kind of thing just bores them to tears.
Yeah.
You know, they don't care, and they don't care to pay for it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Unless they really know the field. Like if you're talking to people in an ad agency. And
I love that experience. When you get a client that they know exactly what you're worth, you know, versus the client that's like, oh man, you're going to charge this. I don't know. You know, then you got the other client that's like, that's great. Send me an invoice. You're doing an awesome job. Love working with you.
No, that's really nice. And it's nice to get to a point in your career, to where, you know, you can just send people a quote as a means of telling them to buzz off.
Yeah.
I mean, I have.
There's a fund that you create for that.
I have people that still contact me about, like, we're looking for 30 to 40 images, and we have, you know, and it's going to be, you know, 2 to 3 hours away, and we have a set budget of like $1,200. And it's
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, you think of the time involved traveling and everything else.
Right.
You're literally earning less than minimum wage.
Definitely.
And you have overhead of health expenses, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. And it's just.
Right.
And so at some point I have many sarcastic emails where I break down my costs for the day.
Right.
And then I'll like put in how much, you know, like these are just the money out of my pocket to do what you want me to do.
I don't think a lot of people see what happens after or what happens before to prepare for these jobs, you know, and I've looked at that too, and I've hit really low numbers over time, they kind of average themselves out. But, you know, it might be a minimal job where I find myself getting down to a very small number for an hourly wage, mm-hmm. you know, because I'll put in 12 hours.
Right.
12 hours processing or in post-production. I can get compulsive.
Right.
That is a negative that I work on. But I can put 12 hours into post-production and still not be happy.
Well, it's what will that I found one of the most difficult things I found in starting out and improving what I'm mm-hmm. doing and still doing was finding people who could give me legitimate input. Because if it was anyone in my family, it was like, oh, that's wonderful.
are doing great, Trent.
Right.
You're just the best.
So I'm the one oddball in most any circle, I guess, that would be like, that's kind of crap.
Yeah, no, I hear even
and then
recent,
my son's like, you don't like my drawing?
Yeah,
I wouldn't do that to my son. I've learned enough in the last, I don't know, however long to not do that kind of thing. But. Yeah. It was very difficult to find people who could tell me, like, this one has interest, mm-hmm. that doesn't, from my perspective.
Yeah.
You know, they help you eliminate your babies, you know?
Right.
And that's a really hard thing to find as you progress, but it's an extremely valuable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to approach your own work extremely critically, as it seems you are.
Oh, definitely. That's why I look older than I probably am.
Right. Yeah. To internalize those failures mm-hmm. is extremely valuable as far as keeping them as reminders as you work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, when I did this, the results were that mm-hmm. I didn't appreciate. Don't do that again.
Right.
So I've had the experience of surfing and thinking I was doing really well.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, someone was taking video. And I'd look at it and be like I look
at
like
that
a
nerd.
Scared old man.
Yeah.
That's very stiff.
Oh, geez.
And, but like, I'd look at my, you know, you look at like a ballerina who knows what they're doing and mm-hmm. it's amazing. And then you look at someone like trying to be like a ballerina and it's like, oh, they must be crippled or something.
Yeah,
What's going on? They're
working on it.
But by getting that feedback when I was surfing, I'd see like things I was doing or, you know, moving my arms. They used to call me the wounded seagull.
Sounds beautiful.
Yes.
Trent.
But I'd like start to, you know, do whatever it was I'd done in that video. And I'd feel like I fit into that frame mm-hmm. all of a sudden. And I was like, oh, don't do that. You know, like calm those arms down a bit, you know, and just seeing that feedback and being able to accept it. And legitimize it and say, yep, that didn't work well, don't do it again, and to have that in the back of your mind as a failure peanut gallery.
I've
kinda
got
like
those. Yeah.
No, do the extra work to turn those lights off
mm-hmm.
because if you don't, it's gonna look like that.
Right.
You know, so
yeah, no, and that's one thing I do too is I've got some images in my mind. Even recent work where I'm like, oh man, I really need to
Well, if you're not failing occasionally due to trying
mm-hmm.
you're not progressing, right. You know? If you're failing due to lack of effort, well, then you're going downhill.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Yeah. And you just want to do the same thing over
and over
again.
Can I just phone this in and go home?
Yeah. That's one thing I'm always, I would say one of the more exciting things in a day-to-day, in my day-to-day work is I'm always trying to see, okay, where am I going next? You know, how am I transitioning into, you know, what my next set of photos are going to look like.
Right.
You know, are they going to look like the ones before, or am I going to bring something to change it a little bit?
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, as you're starting out, like, I would joyfully and gleefully and immediately go shoot anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
And
yeah.
As I've progressed, I've become more, how you say in English?
Refined.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit more like, I don't know if I want to go shoot that.
Yeah.
And now the reason, and to like have a peanut gallery of failure in the back mm-hmm. of your mind. So when I initially was approaching any project, I would just run and gun and gun and gun and gun.
Yeah.
And it was more of a process when I was starting out of getting back and just reviewing all my failures and the few things that like, mm-hmm. wow, that connected with me. And if I had an image that I really loved, I would, you know, move it to my phone or wherever. And I'd just keep looking at it over and over and over for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, now I wonder, as you gain those failures that are valuable and mm-hmm. you have them in the back of your head, every time you go to compose after that, you start out with two, mm-hmm. you know, but then as like 1,000 projects later, how many of those do you have in your head that are talking to you?
Yeah.
So that
process.
So
you just like fall apart.
Well, no, that
I'm
process
not saying you would.
Of capturing is much more horsepower intensive in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got now 1,000 things in your head.
Oh, great.
Of failures that are like, you're approaching a thing and you're like, all right, you know, rev up the horsepower, and before you, you know, say this is a photograph that I will take, you have all these filters, all these, you know, peanuts in the peanut gallery.
People, yes.
You know, saying, all right, did you check this? Did you check mm-hmm. this? Did you check that? This, that, this. Whereas before it was like you had one noisy little peanut up there just kind of like squeaking, and you were like, I'm just going to keep going. You know, 15 years into it, you've got
right.
way more going on, and it's a far more exhaustive process
mm-hmm.
where you take fewer images, but those images, each one, are amazing.
Right.
That's why when you hire a young photographer, I think you can probably get a lot more images, but a lower hit rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That's
true.
Just me shooting from the hip. I don't know.
You're shooting in the right direction. I feel like you are anyway, because that has been somewhat of my progression as well, where at first I would photograph everything compulsively because I didn't want to miss anything.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, 100%. I would literally move like a few inches.
And
take another set of
images.
It
might do this, it might do that. You don't have the feedback from your own process for long enough to say, if I do it here, this isn't good because of that.
Right.
So I move it here and it's better because of that.
And now I have this set group of images in my mind that I know will always work, right?
Right.
So, you know, when I'm approaching a certain room with a certain type of light source, I know in my mind this from my history, what works in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
So now the difficult part about that is, okay, when do I become too repetitive? You know,
oh, sure.
When do I
think you
too
just
bland?
Always make sure you cover those bases.
Right.
Right. You don't, if you skew out of those
mm-hmm.
guidelines that you've created for yourself, you do it intentionally rather mm-hmm. than accidentally.
That's right.
All.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love a straight on shot. You know, it's just a 0-point perspective shot. They cut, you know, it's just a really wonderful feel.
I wonder why, to me, to you and whoever
mm-hmm.
else, why that is such a powerful thing.
Yeah, it just feels so good. You know, everything is just so nicely aligned. And I don't know, you know,
to me, it feels like you're almost looking down the barrel of a gun. It's very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're at an angle drifting or anything else. It's like it's locked in.
That's right.
You know? And so there's no ability to deny what you're looking at or something.
Well, and there's that aspect. How far back is too far back? Like, when am I going to be really dialed in? Like, what does this look like? And I love finding that spot where you're like, this is just, yep, this is great. I can go through and I'll look at photos that I really like. And I mean, not all the time, but, you know, I'll look at past projects and say, oh, this is good. I like that. You know, and then I'll say, oh, my gosh, what was I thinking with that one?
Why is this on my website?
Holy cow, I got to take that down. Yeah, right. I got to work on that stuff sometimes. But I really like your dedication to social media, and just to kind of flip things
purely
back
selfish.
On you. Yeah, so you're just looking for the likes, right? Yeah.
Well, it's another thing for me that I looked at what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and just as viability for business, it's good to be out there, but also I looked at the things that I valued. Conversations one-on-one for me are very, like going to a social event, like
shoot
me in the head.
Yeah.
Conversations like this, I get so much from them.
Yeah,
and I figured if I can, some of the best things that I've ever done for my business have been things where I win and the people I'm interacting with win, and somehow someone else win. You know?
Yeah,
someone can
listen to this and get something out of it.
Yeah,
maybe.
Like if I can contribute some type of good conversation to social media that other photographers or whoever else can benefit from, great. And and it serves me well, great. So, again, it's selfish, but with good intent.
Yeah. Well, it's a great product, you know, and people that are just starting out, I mean, you know, there's a real benefit to be able to watch this type of conversation and say, like, what do their rambling minds? I'll speak for myself.
I can
go all day long, so watch out. But, you know, so what is it like in there? Like, what are they,
thinking? That there is far more value to that than I'm really remembering. Because I remember when I decided I was going to be a photographer.
Yeah.
I come from a very not creative economy family.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's much more service oriented family. Right.
Sure.
And I told my dad and he laughed and he said, you're never going to be able to support a family with photography.
Right. Right.
And then the great kicker is that I think I earned more money than him in my first year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like,
Right. That's a tough thing about, you know, when you first start to make it, you're like, oh my gosh,
it's kind of like,
this is what?
Yeah. And you're in your late 20s, early 30s, telling your family like, oh, I'm going to be a singer songwriter. Like, you've never done this before. What are you
right.
doing?
Yeah.
But, I forget where I was going. Oh,
no,
when I was starting out, so I tried to assist for other photographers.
Mm-hmm.
I tried all this stuff. Nothing was working. I could not assist for anybody. I couldn't get a hold of anyone. I didn't know how to price anything.
Right.
All of that. And so I just kind of, I figured out my own way to wing it and did it. But if I could learn, you know, by listening into other conversations about how people got from one point to another. And like, I'm at the point now where I'm, you know, just breaking into working with ad agencies that work for national brands and everything else. And that's a huge learning curve. And if I, you know, I have found a few podcasts where I can listen to stuff like that and learn from it. And that's very beneficial. But yeah, for that starting out, you know, to hear from people who've gone through it, it's a huge benefit.
Yeah, because so. I mean, I used to take jobs for $150, you know? And I mean, yeah, that's a lot of money, right? I mean, when you're starting out, you're like, holy cow, I'm going to pay for this.
Yeah.
But I used to take that and when you break it down to the amount of time I would spend on these projects, you know, we're talking like a few dollars an hour, you know, especially when you start. But that said, you know, so as things progress, you start changing. And like you were saying, you know, how do you price these things? You know, what's the right way to do it? I've gone through several different phases where, you know, maybe I do per image, maybe I do per day. You know, at this point in my career.
I found architectural photography is a specifically high, generally, especially starting out, it's a higher image production animal than a lot of other, like if you're thinking of, you know, like, hey, I need someone to do this one image for, you know, a magazine ad that I'm putting in a regional publication or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're, you know, that's a different thing than like, hey, I've got a home. It's going to need 12 to 15 images,
yes.
You know? And so, you know, pricing that is difficult starting out and trying to figure out, like, you know, because what realtors are going to mm-hmm. pay is going to be completely different from what a publication is going to pay compared yes. to what a architect is going to pay.
And they're for completely different purposes, you know. Yep. So when you have the broker that's the real estate broker that's asking you to take photos, they're going to use this once, you know. And that's a lot of my pricing is based on, okay, what are you doing with it, you know. So
right.
and I think that's kind of universal, but you know, so for a broker I'll do one thing and it's a much lower price. And then, you know, if you're a, let's say you're a developer, or an architect, and this is going to be used over and over in ads, totally different process.
Right.
Right. You know, it's like being a team member, you know?
Yeah. And it's also, it's always a learning curve and an educational curve for mm-hmm. clients that haven't worked with photographers, don't know copyright laws. There's tons
of... Oh, you can blow their mind if you get... if yeah, you don't know, someone doesn't know about this stuff.
It's a weird thing for them to yeah. think like, no, I paid you to go and do this and I'm going to give it to whoever I want now.
Right.
And it's like, that's not how copyright laws
doesn't,
work.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but that's not going to happen.
Right.
Or you can, you know,
right.
and go and work with someone
yeah,
else.
Yeah, licensing. It's like, it, you know, sometimes I have to stop myself. If I have someone that's brand new to the concept, I'll sometimes want to just jump in and be like, you know, list it all off. And then realize how new it is to them. And
yeah.
You can
yeah.
use it, but they can't. They can use it if they do this, and they can use right. it for this amount of time if they want to do this.
Yeah, you I know? Mean, it's like a lot of people just kind of think of it like, I paid you to build a house. It's my house now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to live in it, and then I'm going to sell it.
Yeah.
It's a different
thing. They don't understand they're essentially renting the photo from you.
Yeah.
You as the creator are the owner. There's, you know, in the photography business, it's a very rare occasion that a photographer will give you full and complete ownership right. of a photo. I don't do it. I don't know if you've ever done it, you know, but...
I love it when people ask for it because I put yeah. a price tag on it.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Nice.
And then they go, oh, what can we do? Oh. Well, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity for you to be like, all right, go yeah. to Getty,
right.
source a similar image
exactly.
and see what they're going to charge you for something that's not your project.
Right. Right.
And you're going to, you know, to get full buyout rights on any mm-hmm. image off of Getty, you're going to be between like 10 grand and 30 grand.
Right. Yeah.
And
oh,
it's
definitely.
Like, this is a stock image. Like mm-hmm. someone took that with no intent of clear vision ahead of time as far as, you know, some specific branding or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You're commissioning a very specific thing that you then want to have exclusive rights for.
Right.
Exclusivity is one thing, but then outright ownership, you know, mm-hmm. for infinity, you know, is a different thing.
Completely. I mean, you could do anything with that, you know. And,
yeah.
you know, I've had one of my friends is a very talented photographer, but he has a 9-to-5 job and he does Getty, you know, he'll take photos for Getty Images. Mm-hmm. And one of his images was in a national print publication. They just bought it offline and he got, you know, a small fee for it and
right.
Or a payment for it. And you know, so... It is interesting how you can transition from just supplying images to having a very specific request.
Right.
And
so I did, starting out with another friend of mine, we would give ourselves challenges.
Okay.
Like once a week or once a month, maybe to say, all right, here's a product, go mm-hmm. and make an ad campaign and shoot it for it.
Oh, that's great.
And so we do that. And, one of them, I had a friend of mine, on a mountain bike doing a scorpion where
yeah.
he went over the front wheel and like his face was hitting a rock and the bike was coming over the back of him. And,
you're a great friend.
Yeah. Well, it was actually November. It was cold and he was
so
actually
yeah,
just sitting in the position.
Yeah.
But we made it look like it was movement and
right,
stuff.
Right.
You know?
It's like, hey, I just need you to flip over
right.
15 times. We'll get the shot.
So I think I paid him, you know, something to come and do that, blah, 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 and told him, you know, it's going to be on social media
yeah.
or not on a stock site,
okay.
iStock at
yeah.
the time, and just come out. And he's like, oh, great, that'll be fun, cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, put it up there. And it ends up like coming to his front door on the cover of Nash Bar, which is a huge right. bike, you know, catalog that goes nationwide. I, you know, I maybe made $50 off of that,
or right.
If that, you know, nothing, but the world becomes your market, you know, so you're able to sell those. And it's just a good creative process, but it ends up coming into to his door on the front mm-hmm. cover. He's like,
oh my gosh.
And then out in California, they used it on a health coverage, health insurance coverage ad on the back of a bus,
mm-hmm.
where I only found out about it because a friend of mine in California saw it on the news because the bus had like run over someone and killed
You're
them.
Right.
And it was on the news. And then my friend was like, wait a minute, and like on the back of the bus is... So yeah, it's weird.
Wild.
If you, I always knew when I submitted those things that eventually I would run into those images
and
somewhere potentially
them, right.
if people bought them. And it was kind of neat to like, oh, there's a
I know. Yeah. My friend has the magazine. It's like a full page ad. It's so funny.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know if they tell you when, I think they tell.
They don't have to.
Yeah. They don't have to. Yeah. Right,
And there's different settings you can put on there for that, and I haven't even checked the income mm-hmm. from that. I think I have 17 images on iStock, and I don't know, like every year I would get a check for like $300 or something.
Sure, yeah.
So there's people in whole studios that approach just doing stock photography and have whole mm-hmm. teams, and you know, and they'll right. make millions a year.
Oh yeah, setting up.
That
Setting up like a little office table with a pen and a piece of paper.
Oh, yeah. You know, the demographic is skewing more, you know, Hispanic, so we have to have more people here
right.
and there and get the models in and dress
right.
them in lab coats. And,
yeah.
you know, so they have to run all those different, mm-hmm. like, algorithms and figure out who's buying what and why and the current trends. And then they produce photography for that and put it online and sell it. And that's one way of working. And I think it could be interesting.
Yeah, but great business sense.
Yeah, not where I ended up.
So. Yeah. Well, you ended up in the right place, clearly. You know,
well, I mean, my background in architecture informs that, I think. So
when did you decide, and I know you're probably supposed to ask me the question, but when did you decide to get into photography? Like when you're at the studio and you're like, you know,
I had two scrapes with photography before I went into photography. One mm-hmm. was in architecture school. They were putting together a booklet to raise money to build a new building for the architecture department. And I photographed everything for it. And I thought, man, that's really fun,
mm-hmm.
like doing the photography for this, finding these moments and everything. Too bad you can't make a living at it. And
right.
kind of like
God, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. yeah. And then I remember in a surf publication, I read a story about this guy who lives on the southern side of Massachusetts, and he was a photographer, and I don't know what it was that he made his living shooting, but mm-hmm. he had also shot these photos of all these different waves around Massachusetts. I read the whole article and I was like, man, his lifestyle sounds great. He's having to actually go to different locations to photograph things
right.
and the way that this guy lived and, you know, just how he was working creatively. I was like, man, that really sounds like a nice way to live,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, too bad you can't make a living at it.
Right.
You know, just disregarding that there's someone making a living at
there
it.
Is.
But it just feels
there
like
is.
It's a one in a million shot. And it wasn't until I just realized that I was not going to be making a living as an architect because I couldn't hack it. I just,
mm-hmm.
to put up with that level of minutiae and clients and that intense focus on like spreadsheet type of details
mm-hmm.
And construction drawing details that have to line up, that have to be everything, like there's just an immense amount of trickle down effect and organization that I was not naturally inclined to, that made it very difficult for me to be involved in that. And to just think I don't want to go to the same spot 80% of the time
mm-hmm.
of my life and do this work.
Right.
That was very difficult to, you know, then say, all right, I need to walk away from the past 8 years of my life. And I just need to throw that away and start over. And I didn't know it at the time, but that's not what I was doing, but it felt
just
like
the next
that.
Step. Yeah.
Yeah. It very much felt like, well, I'm just taking a master's degree in architecture and all the education I've done to this point, all the life experience I've had for the last 3 years working as an architect,
mm-hmm.
just going to throw it away.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on. That's what it felt like. But it was during the time when you could buy and sell real estate through the foreclosure process. Mm-hmm. And so I had bought a couple buildings and was managing them and renovating them. And I just thought, like, well, I'll have my creative process be that I'm renovating these buildings mm-hmm. into nice spaces, you know, but then enters the management part of it. That's extremely stressful that, you know, to me, I could see the potential in these buildings and make them into that. But then the management of people that lived in them was just like a nightmare for
me. Oh, sure.
My wife could do it with her eyes closed. Like, yeah. She loves that interpersonal and, you know, but to me it was horrendous. But I was doing that, and it was while I was doing that, that friend of mine that's out in California was like, mm-hmm. you know, you've already shown that you have an interest in photography and with your background with architecture, why don't you take a stab at that? Just to some degree, mm-hmm. you know, it's a creative outlet, you know? And I think I bought and sold a property, and from the money from that, I bought my first just tripod, mm-hmm. camera, lens, and two strobes.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of started. And I don't know, I just kind of made the decision, like, all right, I am going to do this. And mm-hmm. I look back on it now, I, you know, just the lack of understanding how much of an uphill battle and difficult it could be was mm-hmm. a great benefit.
Yeah. No, that's how when I went into it, when I first started making, getting enough jobs where I was paying my bills, yeah. you know, that was it was like, whoa,
magic.
Wait a second. Holy yeah. cow. And then I went to the thought process, I might be able to ride this out for a few months, you know, before I need yeah. to get another job,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, through the work, you know, just getting kind of that people would call me back and
see,
I'm like, whoa.
The commonality I'm seeing here though, mm-hmm. like people ask me a lot, like what I want to be a photographer, what should I take in school?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, obviously you could take
photography. You could. I think about that.
I don't
like, what
think
would it be like?
It's a good idea,
right.
honestly. And
yeah.
a lot of photo schools have closed down.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people you should study the things you want to photograph because mm-hmm. you're showing other people how you see whatever subject it is. So if you're someone, like I would suggest people take psychology if they want to be a person that's going to be doing portraits, mm-hmm. you know, and then like art and art history to understand the composition and framing and the ideas behind how someone holds their hands, what's it mean and facial,
right.
you know,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. But the commonality between you and I mean, you add this background in understanding real estate and how mm-hmm. it sells and why it sells, and then you kind of combine it with this interest of photography, and from
right.
there you're moving on and turning that into something else. For me, the background of architecture, and you know, we're both, you know, showing more of what we work in.
That's right.
Showing how we see it.
Yeah.
So you know, someone who's a person who naturally has that interpersonal skill
mm-hmm.
And can identify emotional situations and moods and everything else, I would recommend going, if they want to be a photographer, go into the realm of, you know, interacting with people, portraiture,
mm-hmm.
family photography, wedding photography, things that are about that.
I feel like that's the biggest success for those photographers. It's about creating the mood of feeling comfortable,
yeah.
And being
yeah.
yourself. And if you
Annie
have,
Leibowitz, I think
yeah.
it's Annie Leibowitz
okay.
disagrees with that.
Does she?
To a degree,
sorry,
but
Annie.
I think
yeah.
That's her shtick. That's her thing. Maybe
right.
is that, like, it's not my deal to make you comfortable.
Right.
I'm here to like interpret you or
mm-hmm.
something. I
mm-hmm.
don't know.
Well, I think where I can see that being of you, I absolutely, you know, like you're the subject that does, you know, we're separate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I when I think about weddings or, you know, social events and photographing those, it's, you know, if you have an oddball kind of like, you know, within 10 feet of you just staring at you with a camera, it's like, no, you've got to somehow find a way
right.
to become, you know, part of the scene where they're comfortable being themselves.
Right.
something maybe I could do, but I've never had an interest.
I'm not great at that.
I love that feeling that you're talking about, where, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, but it's on a regular basis. I'm in this large, beautiful space, and it's just me.
Right. And you're translating that for other people.
Yeah.
And handing that to them, which is nice. See, I would think there's probably a lot of people that would look at what we do and think that's extremely boring.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just going to nitpick this for the next 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, we're probably introverts.
Extreme introvert right here. So.
Yeah. From psychology. So introvert, extrovert, like, one of the main things about that is introverts would be great at working at, let's say, an airport, looking at the radar screen, right? Because they're so easily stimulated.
Right.
Right. So you see the little blips.
But at the same time, that would drive me nuts to do something that
is so
repetitive. And
but the concept being that, you know, for us to be in that space, if you're more introverted, it's a benefit because it's more exciting than an extrovert who needs to be in these spaces that have more excitement, more energy, and they actually gain energy.
Oh, yeah.
An extrovert gains energy from being around other people.
Oh, to watch my wife and my oldest son in groups and to see them after being in a group is
they're just like,
oh, my word, you people. How do you do this?
Right.
And they're just like, that was so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, let's do it again.
And I'm just like, can we go?
Yeah. 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 I know. I'm the same way. You know, I do just get into it and I make it happen for if I feel like I need to be at some type of event of some sort. But it takes a lot out of me. I'm exhausted after.
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm very aware of how people are reacting to me, how I'm reacting to them.
Yeah.
And there's just so much energy that's put into it.
You just kind of go home, get in your bedroom, shut the door, and
cry. Yeah, but luckily, you know, we both have other halves that seem to be extroverts. And therefore, you know, I'm brought out a little bit more, you know, versus closing the door. And, you know,
I've found that and this might put other people off, I guess, but in those situations where I'm forced to interact with people on a larger scale, I just revert back to really only talking about things that matter, which is unpleasant for a lot of people, I imagine. But, you know, I'll just kind of, I'll challenge people, and that's probably...
You start talking about global warming and stuff like that.
Yeah, or I'll, like, you know, I'll start to ask people what they really believe in settings where it's not really appropriate.
Right.
And, like, it's just, like, why are we wasting our time here talking about the weather when, you know, it... So, but normal people, that's the process, and that's how you set up and build trust.
And relationships,
and
I
get that, but... I don't know. There's something about me that's like, no matter how much, you know, I think I could trust you, I know you could be lying to me, and I'm not great at picking up on people that are lying, and why don't we just be honest with each other here, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you can trust me if you want, and it's such a weird thing, psychology, and it's very interesting, but at the same time, I'm not naturally set up to be someone who can be that
that butterfly.
Well, there's not
that
going
Trent
to
butterfly.
Be any veneer on this kind of thing, you know, like it's just not gonna happen, and if it has to happen, you'll have to do it without me.
Nice. That's good.
It's nice until you have to be married to it and
don't get to be social.
or you know, like I can be extremely critical nonstop, and I can complain about things nonstop. So I at least have to learn to shut up. So.
I agree with you. I've found, like, sometimes I'll get in big trouble because I focus on the details of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's a couple empty bottles of water on the table or something, you know, for some reason that...
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
So right
Brace
now I'm okay.
If you do.
Yeah.
Hey, who left this out? Who left that out? Why is this here? Why is that there? Why didn't you shut this?
Yeah, why can't you just put this away, you know? I gain a lot of energy from having an organization
yeah.
on a healthy level. You know, it's not.
I do too, but I'm too lazy to do it myself. So yeah. I'd rather try and make other people feel like they need to do it for
right.
me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not fun to live
no,
with.
No, I'm sure, Trent. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't videotape my house right now. If you went in there right now, you'd be like, oh my gosh, this guy's a disaster.
Yeah, but, if I lived by myself, I wonder what it would be like.
Yeah.
I don't know if I know I've been messy in the past, but.
Yeah. Well, I live in a very, very small condo. I love it.
Yeah.
It's like 525 square feet. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
It's like the
that
size of
tiny.
The studio.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. But it makes it very easy to, come home, clean up, get everything organized.
Right. And then relax.
And I have a storage unit that has a charging station for all my gear. It's just like you have set up. I put all my gear away at the end of the day, charge everything, and then I take just a couple cards and I go up to my, to my place and then I start uploading things. Yeah. So it works right now, but makes life easy. Yeah.
Well, was there anything else that you had on your mind that you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about? Because I am running out of time a little bit.
Oh, I could talk with you all day, Trent. So,
I have to pee.
Oh, yeah. I've been conserving the water, so I'm good. But no, I think I'm fine. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your podcast.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting to talk to someone else who's going through and working with the same things. And I hope people that are listening to this who are either in the same same situation or working towards that it's a good benefit. So.
Yeah, same here. And I mean, for me, it was just great to connect with you because it's just wonderful to meet other people that are doing the same thing or doing things at a level that you appreciate, to be able to chat with them. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming all the way down. It's been really informative and really delightful.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Thanks
Let's
a lot.
Wrap it up. Thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the...